Blog Talk Radio.
I release all disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me and love lives inside me. That's why today I take life as it comes.
Greetings, everyone. Again, welcome to Higher Consciousness. I am so honored to have this opportunity to connect with you again this evening. For those of you who are in the listening audience and are new, my name is Professor Jamila Franklin, and I am the host and creator of the show, Higher Consciousness. And I always give background information about who I am. Currently, I teach psychology at colleges, and I have a private counseling practice. I am a certified Reiki master and energy medicine practitioner. In addition, I am a certified metaphysician, author, life coach, and aromatherapist in the greater Atlanta, Georgia area, more specifically Stone Mountain, Georgia. And I always give the reason for my developing the show. I wanted to have a forum for discussions about metaphysics, spirituality, holistic psychotherapy, holistic health, holistic nutrition. I wanted to also discuss divine relationships, the law of attraction, divine prosperity, cultural and political topics, as well as universal laws. And for some of my shows, as well as for tonight's show, we will have guests who will cover these topics and more. I just want to give more information about the show for new listeners. Higher Consciousness is a two-hour show that will allow listeners to delve into topics at a higher vibrational level. The only ground rule is that everyone gives respect when expressing opinions. And this rule automatically raises your vibrational level so that you can receive respect as well. So, without further delay, I want to give information about tonight's topic. Tonight's topic is a salute to mothers, and our special guests are Ms. Linda Minnick and Ms. Louise Helene. For the entire month of May, I am going to honor mothers, and you do not have to be a biological mother in order to be considered a mother. You can be a spiritual mother. So, for the entire month of May, we will salute mothers and all the wonderful women in their roles as mothers, biological mothers, or spiritual mothers, grandmothers, godmothers, aunts, sisters, friends, colleagues, whatever the title is. If you have been a nurturer, you have been a mother. So if anyone wants to join in on the discussion this evening, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the call-in number is 818-572-8023 and press 1. And for those who want to use the internet who may be listening via phone, you can just type in https://tobtr.com/s/4777659. Again, the link is http://tobtr.com/s/4777659. Internet users, you will still have to call 1-818 972-8023 and press 1 if you want to join in on the discussion. And only one caller at a time. Again, this is Higher Consciousness, and I am Professor Jamila Franklin. And the purpose is to connect with you on a heart-to-heart and soul-to-soul level with this particular show. This is not a show for intellectual debates. Instead, this show is dedicated to those who truly want to learn and to grow spiritually and to heal. Now, last week, we discussed the power of words in prose and in song. We had 20 callers, and we had 8 live listens, which means 8 people were on the computer at the time that the show originally aired. Since then, however, we've had 250 downloads, which means 250 people have downloaded the show and are continuing to download the Higher Consciousness show since last week. And as always, I'm so very thankful to each of you. And since October 22nd, 2012, when I first aired the show, we have had 26,060 listens. Again, since October 22nd, 2012, we've had 26,060 listens, which includes the live calls. And this is in only 6.5 months, so that's really phenomenal. So now remember, if you can't join us live, go to the website, and you can hear all of the shows which are archived. And most of the listens occur after the show has aired. Most people download the show after it has been aired. And last week we discussed the ways words empower, uplift, and heal through stories and songs. And our guests were Emily Hines, an author, Sarah Hines Martin, her cousin, who is also an author, and Rahima E. Liz Cowley, who is a phenomenal vocalist. And both shared with us their ways in which they themselves have uplifted people through their written words or through song, as Rahima shared last week. Now, what I want to do this evening before bringing on our first guest at 7:30, who is Ms. Linda Minnick, who is an exceptional person, I'm going to give you the history of Mother's Day. And usually when we have holidays, I go over the history so the listening audience will have some idea as to the origin of the holidays, because a lot of times people don't really know. The majority of countries that celebrate Mother's Day do so on the second Monday of May. And on this day, it is common for mothers to be celebrated with presents and special attention from their families, friends, and loved ones. But it wasn't always this way. I'm going to give you the spiritual origins of Mother's Day. The traditional practice of honoring motherhood is rooted in antiquity. Ancient rites has strong symbolic and spiritual overtones, as societies tended to celebrate goddesses and symbols of motherhood rather than actual mothers. Objects of adoration ranged from mythological female deities to the Christian church. Now, the personal family orientation of Mother's Day is a relatively new phenomenon. Only in the past few centuries did celebrations of motherhood develop a decidedly human focus, and only in the last century did Mother's Day take on commercial overtones. The early Egyptian roots for Mother's Day. One of the earliest historical records of a society celebrating a mother deity can be found among the ancient Egyptians, who held an annual festival to honor the goddess Isis. You see, a lot of people didn't know that, because a lot of people credit the Greeks as the originators of honoring the mother, but it was done in Egypt with the goddess Isis. Now, her stern, beautiful face is typically crowned by a pair of bull horns enclosing a fiery sun orb. She is most often depicted sitting on a throne. Now, as the story goes, after Isis' brother dash husband Osiris was slain and dismembered in 13 pieces by their jealous brother Seth, Isis reassembled Osiris' body and used it to impregnate herself. She then gave birth to Horus, whom she hid among the reeds, lest he be slaughtered by Seth. Horus grew up and defeated Seth, and then became the first ruler of a unified Egypt. Thus, Isis earned her stature as the mother of the pharaohs. So, Isis is the first mother to have been acknowledged and commemorated for in this now latter-day version of Mother's Day. It began with the story of Isis. Isis also held a place at the Roman temple, despite being a foreign deity. The festival of Isis was used by the Romans to commemorate an important battle and mark the beginning of winter. The celebration, which lasted for 3 days, centered around mostly female dancers, musicians, and singers. It is interesting to note that the mother and son imagery of Isis and Horus, in which Isis cradles and suckles her son, is strikingly similar to that of the Virgin Mary and baby Jesus. Cybele and Rhea, ancient mother goddesses. Isis may have been early on the scene in Rome, but it was the emergence of two other mother goddesses, Cybele from Phrygia in ancient Anatolia, which is modern Turkey, and Rhea from Greece, that perhaps laid the most important foundation for the worship and celebration of motherhood in Europe. So Isis was the mother figure and goddess figure for motherhood in Egypt. And Cybele, I would just call it Cybele, and Rhea were the two figures that were commemorated in Europe. The Phrygian goddess Cybele has roots dating back 6,000 years to Neolithic times. Phrygians celebrated a mother goddess whose realm was the earth's mountains and caverns, natural surroundings, and wild animals. References to Cybele as Potnia, Theron, a term used by Homer to describe female divinities associated with animals, confirm to her ancient Neolithic roots as mother of the animals. By around 600 BC, worship of the Phrygian mother goddess had been adopted into much of Asia Minor and parts of Greece. Now, the Greeks called her Cybele and also called her Matar for mother. At the same time, some Greeks already worshipped another mother goddess, Rhea, or Rhea, the Greek mother of the gods. Now, Rhea was born from the union of the Greek goddess Gaia, which is the personification of earth, and Uranus, the sky god. The two mother goddesses, Cybele above and Rhea, were so similar in their nature that they became closely, almost interchangeably intertwined in Greek life and culture. After a meteor shower and failed harvest seemed to predict doom for the Roman Republic, Rome officially adopted Cybele as its own mother goddess. Eventually, the Romans and the Greeks simply referred to her as Magna Mater, the Great Mother. The Roman festival of Megalesia to celebrate the Magna Mater goddess was held from April 4th through 10th in close proximity to the vernal equinox, which is March 20th and the 21st, and the Roman festivals of Hilaria, March 15th through 28th, in celebration of Sebele. Now, during the Hilarion Games, during the Hilaria, games were held in honor of the Mother of the Gods. Customary during the Hilaria was a procession through the streets with a statue of the goddess carried at the head, followed by a display of elaborate arts and crafts. Now, with some of the earlier festivals, they celebrated the Anatolian mother goddess, and these festivals were said to be at times so wild that they were eventually discouraged or banned. But the more conservative celebrations of Magna Mater, Hilaria, and equivalents involved eating honey cakes and sharing flowers. Now, with the European celebration, by the 16th century, as ancient Roman religious and cultural traditions in Europe and England gave way to the spread of Christianity, Hilaria's celebrations became part of Laetare Sunday, the fourth Sunday of Lent in the Christian calendar, the 40 days of fasting preceding Easter Sunday. Early Christians in England initially used the day to honor the Virgin Mary, Mother of Christ, and the church in which they were baptized, which they knew as their mother church. Now, this place of worship would be decorated with jewels, flowers, and other offerings. In the 17th century, a clerical decree in England broadened the celebration from one focus on the church and the Virgin Mary to include real mothers, referring to the occasion as Mothering Day. Mothering Day became an especially compassionate holiday toward the working classes of England. During this Lenten Sunday, servants and trade workers were allowed to travel back to their towns of origin to visit their families. Mothering Day also provided a reprieve from the fasting and penance of Lent. Families across England enjoyed a family feast. Mothers were presented with cakes and flowers, and beloved distant children came home to visit. When the first English settlers came to America, they discontinued the tradition of Mothering Day. While the British holiday would live on, the American Mother's Day would be invented with an entirely new history centuries later. One explanation for the settlers' discontinuation of Mothering Day was that they just didn't have time. They worked under harsh conditions and were forced to work long hours in order to survive. Another possibility, however, is that Mothering Day conflicted with their puritanical values and ideals. Fleeing England to practice a more conservative Christianity without being persecuted, the pilgrims ignored the more secular holidays, focusing instead on a no-frills devotion to God. For example, even holidays such as Christmas and Easter were more somber occasions for the pilgrims, usually taking place in a church that was stripped of all extraneous ornamentation. Now, the first North American Mother's Day was conceptualized with Julia Ward Howe's Mother's Day Proclamation in 1870. Despite having penned the Battle Hymn of the Republic 12 years earlier, Howe had become so distraught by the death and carnage of the Civil War that she called on mothers to come together and protest what she saw as the futility of their sons killing the sons of other mothers. With the following, she claimed for an International Mother's Day celebrating peace and motherhood, and this is her proclamation. Arise then, women of this day. Arise, all women who have hearts. Whether your baptism be that of water or of tears, say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Our husbands shall not come to us reeking of carnage for caresses and applause. Our sons shall not be taken from us to unlearn all that we have been able to teach them of charity, mercy, and patience. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth, a voice goes up with our own and says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor, nor violence indicate possession. As men have of ten forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war, let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each bearing after his own time the sacred empress, not of Caesar, but of God. In the name of womanhood and humanity, I earnestly ask that a General Congress of Women without limit of nationality may be appointed and held at some place deemed most convenient, and at the earliest period consistent with its objects, to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, the great and general interest of peace. And this was penned by Ms. Howell, the person who also wrote the Battle Hymn of Republic as a response to what was going on regarding the Civil War. Now, at one point, Howell even proposed converting July 4th into Mother's Day in order to dedicate the nation's anniversary to peace. Eventually, however, June 2nd was designated for the celebration. In 1873, women's groups in 18 North American cities observed this new Mother's Holiday. Howell initially funded many of these celebrations, but most of them died out when she stopped footing the bill. The city of Boston, however, would continue celebrating Howell's holiday for 10 more years. So from 1873 to 1883, Boston continued celebrating it on June 2nd. Despite the decided failure of her holiday, Howell had nevertheless planted the seed that would soon blossom into what we know as Mother's Day today. A West Virginia women's group led by Anna Reeves Jarvis began to celebrate an adaptation of Howell's holiday. In order to reunite families and neighbors that had been divided between the Union and Confederate sides of the Civil War, the group held a Mother's Friendship Day. After Anna Reeves Jarvis died, her daughter, Anna M. Jarvis, campaigned for the creation of an official Mother's Day in remembrance of her mother and in honor of peace. In 1908, Anna petitioned the superintendent of the church where her mother had spent over 20 years teaching Sunday school. Her request was honored. On May 10, 1908, the first official Mother's Day celebration took place at Andrews Methodist Church in Grafton, West Virginia, at a church in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The West Virginia event drew a congregation of 407, and Anna Jarvis arranged for white carnations, her mother's favorite flower, to adorn the patrons. Two carnations were given to every mother in attendance. Today, white carnations are still used to honor deceased mothers, while pink or red carnations pay tribute to mothers who are still alive. Andrews Methodist Church was incorporated into the International Mother's Day Shrine in the late 1960s, and in 1992 became a national historic landmark for its importance and significance in the establishment of a national Mother's Day celebration. In 1908, a U.S. senator from Nebraska, Elmer Burkett, proposed making Mother's Day a national holiday at the request of the Young Men's Christian Association, the YMCA, and the proposal was defeated But by 1909, 46 states were holding Mother's Day services, as well as parts of Canada and Mexico. Anna Jarvis quit working and devoted herself full time to the creation of Mother's Day, endlessly petitioning state governments, business leaders, women's groups, churches, and other institutions and organizations. She finally convinced the World's Sunday School Association to back her, a key influence over state legislators and Congress. So in 1912, West Virginia became the first state to officially recognize Mother's Day. And in 1914, Woodrow Wilson signed it into national observance, declaring the second Sunday in May as Mother's Day. The holiday flourished in the United States. Flowers, especially white carnations, became a very popular part of the celebration. And one business journal, Florist Review, went so far as to print, "This was a holiday that could be exploited." But the budding commercialization of Mother's Day greatly disturbed Jarvis, who vociferously opposed what she perceived as a misuse of the holiday. In 1923, Jarvis sued to stop a Mother's Day event. In the 1930s, she was arrested for disturbing the peace at the American War Mothers Group. She was protesting their sale of flowers. Jarvis also petitioned against a postage stamp featuring her mother with a vase of white carnations and the word Mother's Day. Jarvis was able to have the words Mother's Day removed, but the flowers remained. In 1938, Time magazine ran an article about Jarvis's fight to copyright Mother's Day, but by then it was already too late to change the commercial trend. In opposition to the flower industry's exploitation of the holiday, Jarvis wrote, "What will you do to root charlatans, bandits, pirates, racketeers, kidnappers, and other termites that would undermine their greed, one of the finest, noblest, and truest movements and celebrations?" Despite her efforts, flower sales on Mother's Day continued to grow. Florist Review wrote, "Miss Jarvis was completely squelched." Anna Jarvis died in 1948, blind, poor, and childless. Jarvis would never know that it was, ironically, the florist exchange that had anonymously paid for her care. By the time of Anna M. Jarvis's death, over 40 countries observed the Mother's Day. Today, that number exceeds 70. In many countries, the U.S. version of Mother's Day was imported with little cultural adaptation. Other countries would include traditions that stem from the English Mothering Day, and some maintain traditions quite different from those of the United States. And still others have ignored or abandoned the more religious and commercial notions of Mother's Day, choosing instead to focus on women's issues and women's rights by celebrating International Women's Day. While the United States version of Mother's Day, the version most widely exported to the rest of the world, has secular humanist roots followed up by extensive commercialization, many countries, regardless of this Western trend, continue to attach more symbolic and or religious importance to their Mother's Day celebrations. For instance, in Spain, Mother's Day takes place during the Feast of the Immaculate Conception on December 8th. In Ethiopia, the holiday is tied to seasons in agriculture. In Yugoslavia, it leads up to Christmas, commemorating the motherhood of Christ. And here are some examples of the ways in which Mother's Day has spread throughout the rest of the world. In Argentina, most of South America observes Mother's Day. Argentina celebrates it on the second Sunday in October. So, and then other countries, France observes it, India, Japan, Mexico, and as we said before, the United Kingdom, Yugoslavia, many countries in Asia, and Australia, Bahrain, Belgium, in Canada, China, Denmark, Hong Kong, Italy, Norway, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Serbia, Singapore, South Africa, Thailand, and Turkey. So without further ado, after this commercial break, I'm going to bring on our first guest, who is Ms. Linda Minnick. Ms. Minnick is going to share with us some of her insights as to how she's been able to combine being a mother and a corporate executive. And for the 8 o'clock part of the show, Louise Helene is going to talk about how she's a spiritual mother, and she's going to also be available to give women intuitive readings to tell them how to tap within their inner goddess selves to know what is their best and their highest, particularly as it relates to relationships. So this is a wonderful show. We have mothers who are listening, mothers who are calling in, and mothers who are going to be guests. So after this commercial break, I will bring in Ms. Linda Minnick. Stay tuned.
This is Professor Jamila Franklin, CEO and President of Oyende Enterprises, a holistic wellness company. We provide dynamic certified Reiki and energy medicine classes and trainings, certified aromatherapy courses, metaphysics courses, life coaching sessions, and private holistic counseling sessions. For more information, call 770-808-8051 or go to our website at www.oyendeenterprises.com. That is spelled OYINDEENTERPRISES.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome back. This is Professor Jamila Franklin, and we're coming into the 7:30 part of our show with our first wonderful guest, Ms. Linda Minnick. And as I mentioned at the top of the hour, this is the month of May in which we're celebrating all women who are either biological or spiritual mothers. And most women have been a nurturing in someone's life. They've provided nurturing, so you don't have to have had physical children in order to be considered a mother. So we're honoring all women who have nurtured someone in their lives. Okay. Now, Linda Minnick is a certified life coach, motivational speaker, certified sales trainer, and entrepreneur. She has been involved in coaching and training for over 25 years, and has presented training programs on national stages across the country. Linda was the CEO of Encore Marketing Associates for 13 years, working with clients across the country. Her client base included companies such as Verizon, Siemens, ACS, Microsoft, Coca-Cola, and the National Promotional Product Association. She is a student of Zig Ziglar, Brian Tracy, Dr. Wayne Dyer, and many others. She is a personal mentee of Bob Proctor, Mary Morrissey, Gay Hendricks, and Peggy McCowell. As a true believer and practitioner of transformational thinking, Linda presents the power of creating your own life in various fashions to individuals and groups around the country, and now the world. Linda lives in Roswell, Georgia, with her husband, John, and they have 4 adult children and 2 wonderful grandchildren. So, without further ado, I'm going to now bring on Linda Minnick. Greetings, Linda. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Jamelia. Thank you for having me on.
Well, thank you for honoring us by being a guest this evening. So I gave the history of Mother's Day for a lot of people because a lot of people were not familiar with the origin of Mother's Day. So what I do at the beginning of my shows when I'm commemorating particular holidays, I like to give the background information. So what I would like to do now is have you tell our listening audience how you've been able to keep the balls up in the air, because I know you have since retired from working in corporate America, but how were you able to work in corporate America, be a wife, and be a mother as well?
Well, you know, Jamelia, my children range in age. My oldest son is 37, and my youngest daughter is 21. So there's quite an age group, age gap between the four of them there. And what's interesting is I've been kind of reviewing my, since knowing I was coming on, reviewing my history as a working mother since my oldest son, Eric, and my youngest son, Kate. And when the boys were little, the two oldest, 37 and 34, that was at a time when a lot of women weren't working. So I was, you know, it was different than it was today. But one of the things that I always tried to incorporate in my personal life, covering both work and home, is being involved in a profession that, one, that I enjoyed, but two, would allow me the flexibility to be a mother. So when I first started working, I was pretty much just in an office as they used to call us secretaries back then. And I realized as the boys came along that anytime I needed to go see them, I'd have to get somebody's permission to leave the office. And I've always been a pretty headstrong person, and asking for permission to go see my kids was not something that really rubbed me right. So I found a profession that I thought would work, and so I got into sales, outside sales, and it did work for me. It allowed me to have better control of my calendar. And so one of the things that I've been able to do to help support both professional and personal is finding positions that allowed me to be where I needed to be when I had to be there. As the boys grew and the girls came along, especially the youngest one, I ended up opening my own company, which was Encore Marketing. You know, when I was able to work out of the house. When my oldest were younger, working out of the house was not something that was widely practiced. And so I was able to open my own company and work out of the house, which was nice. And then it allowed me to take part, you know, in school things and to take control of my calendar, which was one thing. Another thing that I found really important and would really suggest to the women out there who are working and trying to juggle a family is make sure that you're employed somewhere doing something that you really love doing. One of the things that I learned along the way was when I had a position that I didn't enjoy, it made my home life not happy because I would bring it home, you know, I'd come home frustrated. And there's nothing like coming home to a house of, you know, three or four little kids when you're frustrated after being at work all day. So make sure that what you're doing, you love doing it. And it was, those were some of the things that I employed to help keep our house running and the balls juggling.
Well, that's very good advice because I think a lot of times women may not think about that. Sometimes they have guilt. I've heard of that, especially with the first child. You know, they have guilt of leaving the baby in someone else's care.
Right.
And but then at the same time, sometimes women feel conflicted because they want to have a career, but then they want to be able to be with their children at the same time. And if you're in a job that you don't like, and you have those other conflicting emotions, and that can be overly stressful and very overwhelming. And I think that's you hit upon something we are by telling or suggesting to women, make sure if you're working outside of the home, that at least you have peace with the decision of working in a job that you like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and you mentioned a big word there, guilt. And, you know, as women, especially mothers or anyone who's taking care of someone else, and even nowadays it's not just children. There's a lot of people who are sandwiched between their children and their elderly parents. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you had mentioned all the nurturers. We feel guilty about having to make choices to be away from them. But if we keep focused on the big picture, if we really know what we're trying to create, then we, you know, guilt really doesn't help us
mm-hmm.
as we move forward. And if we know we're doing the best we can, which is, you know, what we're doing, then that we have to have faith that we're walking in the right steps. My oldest son is 16 years older than my youngest daughter, and I was talking to the youngest one today, and I was telling her about this, and I said, I was a totally different mom for you than I was for him because of all the experience I had. And it's the same thing when we
mm-hmm.
have multiple children. And so, you know, I look back at some of the decisions that I made with our first child, and it's like I could say, why did I do that? Well, I did that because that was what I understood to do at the time.
Exactly.
So, as you know, as caregivers and mothers, we do the best we can at that time based on the information we have. And, you know, what happens when we make mistakes is we learn from them and we go
mm-hmm.
forward.
Mm-hmm.
So if, you know, we wake up every day knowing what we're trying to create and, you know, the family unit we're trying to support, and we make the best judgments on with that in mind, there should be very little guilt in what we do.
I think that's a very good point, because the cliche, hindsight is 20/20 vision. A lot of
right.
times if we know what we now know, we would have made different decisions. And I've said to my clients in my counseling practice and when I teach classes and coach now, I tell people do that your mom or your parents have done the best that they could.
Right.
Once people know better, usually they do better. Sometimes,
right.
sometimes they don't, but usually they do. And so a lot of mothers, I've heard mothers who are friends of mine have said, if they knew then, when they were raising their children, what they know now, they would have done it very differently. But they
yes.
did the best. And sometimes, too, women are modeling what they saw with their own mothers.
Correct.
Because there were no books, you know, 20 to 30 years ago. People were just winging it. You didn't go to parenting classes.
That's
right. You did it by modeling someone else's patterns, or you did it using your gut instincts. Now there are all these theories to show you how to parent and to show the super nanny who provides assistance.
Yeah.
But 20, 30, 40 years ago, that was non-existent.
Right.
So.
Well, and, you know, I mean, and our times have changed. I mean, if you just look at the different things, pediatricians tell new mothers versus what we were told, you know, what to feed the baby and what not to feed the baby. Times change and beliefs change. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to make the decision, you know, the best decision you can. And I have to admit, one of my best tools is my own instinct,
mm-hmm.
you know, listening to my own instinct. And as your kids get older, that instinct's really important. One of the things I would suggest is when you think there's something up, check it out.
mm-hmm.
You know, our instincts were given to us for a good reason, and they really come in handy when you're raising children.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a friend of mine who is a new mother and realized that when you have a toddler, silence is not golden. Silence can be challenging.
Yeah,
you need
that's
to figure
true.
Out why
it's
are they so quiet.
Exploring something.
Yes.
There
yes.
is something. Yeah. That is so true. When you don't hear anything, it's like, okay, what's going on?
That's right. That's right. So it's good to follow your intuition, but and not, you know, and we make mistakes, you know, and just mm-hmm. like you said, you learn from it and you move forward. And one of the things that, you know, one of the good things about being a parent and making a mistake is that your children learn, one, that you're human, and
mm-hmm.
two, if you can recover from a mistake gracefully and move forward to success, they also get a good example of moving forward when they make mistakes, because we all fall down at some point. Mm-hmm. It's that getting back up again and trying again, and mm-hmm. you get a lot of practice of that as a parent, and especially as a working parent.
I like that, because you're teaching children how to overcome obstacles. If they don't
yeah.
see how you work through it without going on into the intricacies of what's going on, they just need to know, okay, mommy is able to bounce back, and this is how she bounced back.
Mm-hmm.
Then
yeah.
they're able to not give in to circumstances. This is really interesting, because I see some young people now whose parents have not provided them with that modeling. So
right.
they don't know what to do in times of crises.
Yeah.
They buckle because their parents
right.
have rescued them. Especially moms. Moms have
right.
sometimes have created codependent relationships.
Well, you know, I've known a few people in my life that their parents gave them the impression that the parents were perfect, that they were perfect, and so then they
mm-hmm.
thought they had to be perfect, and it really caused them serious problems as they got older, as they realized they weren't perfect, that they couldn't,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all the time mom and dad were making mistakes, they just weren't making mistakes in front of the kids. So, you know, being perfect is tough to live up to.
It really is. It really
yeah.
is. It really
yeah.
is. And then it's not teaching children how to handle situations either. But how did you, because you were kind of like a trailblazer to raise children, to be a working mom, what, about 37, close to 40 years ago, when
mm-hmm.
some women were still stay-at-home mom. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think people were transitioning because of the women's movement was front and center, like the late 60s and 70s. But there were still
right.
some mothers who were stay-at-home moms and who felt that they had to be at home with their children, even though they were feeling a little unfulfilled because they wanted to work as well, but they didn't know how to balance the two. So I know that you went into sales to enable you to have freedom in terms of your time, but how did you reconcile that emotionally?
Well, one of the reasons I went to work, I mean, it was always nice to have some extra cash, but the truth of the matter was I was one of those women that staying at home all day long, I mean, no children or children, just staying at home all day long did not fit my personality.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I needed to get out. And, you know, have you ever heard the term, if mama's not happy, nobody's happy?
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the reason I went to work was to find my own self, to fill something in me that I know needed to be filled. And what it did was it allowed me to really appreciate when I was home with my kids, but it also gave me a sense of self. So a lot of women that I have had in my as clients are empty nesters, and their kids are gone, and they don't know what to do with themselves because they've always taken care of their kids, and they've never developed
mm-hmm.
a sense of self. We can't be the best people we're supposed to be. We can't be the people we're supposed to be if we're not filling our own sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important for our children to learn too. So, what I did back then is, I lived here in the South. We lived in Atlanta and then in Raleigh, North Carolina, and it really, you know, there were certain times when it was really challenging to have, you know, neighbors say, "Why are you working? Why aren't you home with your children?" But
mm-hmm.
it made me a happier mother. It made me a better person. And, you know, like I said, it wasn't all for money. So the extra cash, we were able to do things. And we really spent a lot of time being with our kids. One of the things we've always done is we would always have Sunday dinners together, you know, and we would just do things with the kids, and I would just make time for it. Mm-hmm. So that's how I counterbalanced it, that when the time we had together was better time than just, it was more quality than quantity.
Mm-hmm. Have your children given you any feedback regarding their upbringing in terms of your being a working mom versus a stay-at-home mom?
Well, yes, they. It's interesting. I've talked to a couple of them, and of course, they didn't know any. They didn't know any different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they only had a working mom, and when they were going through it, because they all had their own chores and things to do. When mom worked and dad worked, we all worked together as a unit to keep the house going. Well, as they were going through it, they didn't really appreciate it, but. What we found, which, you know, it's one of those things that you look back and say, thank you, God, that was the right decision, is as they got into college, they were more capable to take care of themselves. Like mm-hmm. they knew how to cook and they knew how to do laundry and they knew, you know, how to take care of a house. So when they mm-hmm. were out on their own, they started appreciating it, that they had the opportunity, you know, they didn't like it when they had to do it. They didn't like having to empty the trash cans or doing the dishes or whatever it was, but they realized now that it was, you know, it made them a couple of steps ahead of other kids. I remember one, a friend of my daughter, she didn't know what a carrot peeler was. She had no clue what that was. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the challenges, but one of the nice things when you say, how did we deal with doing this, is when you are in a situation where both parents are working or if you're in a single home and you're working and you can't really do everything by yourself. So
mm-hmm.
you form a family unit. You know, one of the benefits out of not being home, being able to do all of this by yourself, is then we do have free time, or when you are together, you can work together. Everyone is involved in creating a nice home, making sure the home is clean, making sure that things are taken care of, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. It's a great bonding situation when, you know, Saturday morning's cleanup time and then Saturday afternoon's playtime. And it makes them, it gives them a sense of, you know, being capable. We have to start teaching our kids to being responsible, but also that they're capable of doing things. And when they start as youngsters, I mean, even 2 and 3 and 4, they can pick up their toys and pick up their clothes off the floor. When we start at a young age teaching them that they can be, you know, capable human beings, it builds self-confidence and it gives them, you know, building blocks to take the next step, to try something new. You know, when they know they can cook a meal or do the dishes or they have these tools that they've learned, it makes them more self-aware of who they are and
mm-hmm.
their abilities. So
I agree with that. I really like that, because you become more self-reliant, because
mm-hmm.
that's what happened with my mom. My mom was a single parent,
mm-hmm.
and she would pay neighbors to babysit me during the time that she worked, but I'm not a person who's really needy, and I'm a
right.
person who feels very comfortable in her skin, and I can be
mm-hmm.
with people, or I can be with myself. I don't consider myself being by myself, but I don't have to be in a crowd of people,
right.
And I feel very comfortable with that, and I'm very confident in going in places where I don't know people, because I've had to do that. My mom taught me certain kinds of skills, survival skills. I was very spoiled. Certain things I didn't
yeah.
know how to do. I didn't know how to cook, and I didn't know how to take care of my clothes and things like that, because she did all of that. I was spoiled. But in terms of characteristics, certain kinds of characteristics, I know how to take care of myself in terms of my values, and I know what to look for, and I'm a very strong person because of that. because
right.
she imparted those kinds of characteristics within me. I had to be, or I would not have survived, because I had no other brothers and sisters in the house with me. My brother, whom I didn't really know, is 20 years older than I am, so we didn't grow up together. But I applaud her efforts, because it took a lot of her being a single mom over 40 years
yes.
ago and teaching me certain skills in, so that I could take care of myself. And
mm-hmm.
Those skills have really served me well. And the remaining 5 to 6 minutes, Linda, I want to talk about your stellar background. You studied under Ziglar, who's a renowned who was a renowned speaker and
mm-hmm.
What we now call coach,
right.
empowerment person, Bob Proctor. For those of you who have viewed the DVD, The Secret, he was the guy with the gray hair in the DVD, The Secret, who is also an empowerment person. You have a lot of people that are very good that you've studied with
mm-hmm.
and or know personally. So how have you used those skills, your mothering skills, you know, first of all, as your foundation, and shifted that over into your business?
Well, as a life coach, a lot of what I do is, first of all, listen to what my clients are looking for. And as a coach, I support people in creating their dreams. And as a extra set of eyes and ears, when we work with a client, sometimes we can help them recognize where their blocks are. So like a mother, we can question,
mm-hmm.
you know, ask the right questions to help help them recognize what they're really trying to, what they really want out of their life. And then once they can identify what they really want out of their life, it's supporting them in that. When I decided to do this full-time, I recognized that it was the training and the coaching that I did as a sales manager and professional and speaker and my mothering, that I really enjoyed nurturing people and helping them recognize the greatness within themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the greatest gifts as a mother is, you know, when you see your baby take the first step, or when you see your child cross the stage and get their diploma. Well, it's the same thrill that I get now when I see one of my clients reach a goal, whether that's, you know, professionally or personally or whatever. And so being a mother for, you know, almost 38 years has really supported everything that I've learned from these great teachers. It was it's a great training ground for a life coach, 4 children and a husband. So And it's applying a lot of the same concerns and recognitions and sometimes, in some cases, you know, being that coach and saying, did you do what you were supposed to do? And if not, how come? And you know, holding people accountable for what they're trying to create in their own life.
Mm-hmm. That's phenomenal. So what other services, because you've worked with some very impressive companies, Coca-Cola, Verizon, Siemens, and some other companies, what would you want your listening, your listening audience as well as my listening audience to know? What are the nuggets that you want to leave with them in terms of how you were able to combine and use your strengths as a mother? And you've talked about that, but
mm-hmm.
moved it into the present day situation, because you're now a phenomenal life coach.
Mm-hmm.
So
well. One of the things I'd like to suggest, and whether you're a mother or not, is know what you're trying to create in your life. Recognize that you have a potential within you to create anything you want. We're only limited to our imagination. And once you recognize your own greatness and you start walking the road to, you know, to get to that point, not only are you living your best life, but you're living an example for everyone around you, children or not. I see us all as jigsaw puzzle pieces sometimes, and if we're in the right spot, if we're positioned right and doing what we really love to do and what we're called to do, we'll fit into the puzzle, and the puzzle will make a beautiful picture. But if we're not, if we're out of sorts, if we're not thinking of ourselves and doing what we're supposed to do, then everybody around us is a little affected by that. So that's what I would suggest. Find what you love to do, and, you know, be the great person that you're meant to be.
Well, in my talking with you and having met you, and we've had several discussions, I have been so impressed with your approach to life, and you've just combined so many different theories and philosophies, and it's come, and you've created this wonderful practice, because you have a metaphysical base, you have a corporate knowledge, you have a marketing background, you have sales background, and you are a wonderful mother. So you combine all these things, and you've created this wonderful current coaching practice. I would like you to give people information about your coaching services and how they may be able to get in touch with you for future consultations.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. How my services are performed, I do either group coaching. I offer several programs as group coaching, workshops, and then I also do personal coaching one-on-one. I also have been doing a lot of speaking for groups, whether it's lunch and learns or specific programs, and people can reach me. My website is lindaminnick.com. My telephone number is 678-367-3459, and my email is linda@lindaminnick.com. I offer free 30-minute phone sessions for anyone who is interested in coaching services, and if I could be of any service to you or to a group, please feel free to reach out. I'd love to talk to you.
Okay, and Linda's last name is spelled M-I-N-N-I-C-K. And Linda, can you give them the contact information again?
Sure. Email is Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at lindaminnick, M-I-N-N-I-C-K.com. And my office line is 678-367-3459.
And do you have a special demographic, or
I've had clients as young as 20, and I go all the way up until wherever. all ages,
okay.
Both genders. I have clients all over the country. So,
okay. So, listening audience, be you in Georgia, or if you are in another state or outside of the country, Linda is giving you information that you can use to call her, to contact her. And please go to her website. She has all of her information listed on her website. And you can also listen to the show again, because it will become available immediately after it ends at 9 o'clock. At 9:01, it becomes archived. So please forward this information to friends, family, coworkers, colleagues, to anyone who can benefit from her wonderful services as a life coach. And life coaching means that the person is taking your strengths and showing you what your strengths are. It's different than counseling. Counseling, the person is providing you with a lot of information and some insights. With coaching, you already have the knowledge, and what they do is they show you that you are in charge of your life, and they empower you and give you the tools that you can use to make your life differently. So you are the master at the helm in terms of life coaching.
Correct.
Okay,
Correct.
So Linda, we thank you, and I would like for you to remain on the line. So if anyone would like to give a call, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Linda will be available until the end of the show, but after this commercial break, what I'm going to do is bring on Louise Helene for the second part of the show, and I will bring Linda back in if there's a call directly, specifically for her. So stay tuned. We're coming into our next commercial break.
Are you stressed, tired, need to relax? Peace Be Still, a natural holistic aromatherapy blend, is your answer. My name is Jacqueline Scott, and I have been a faithful user for years. For more information and to purchase Peace Be Still, a wonderful blend for the entire family, go to Amazon.com or call 770-808-8051 today.
Welcome back. This is Higher Consciousness, and this is Professor Jamila Franklin. Tonight we are saluting mothers for the entire month of May. We are saluting mothers, whether you are a biological mother or a spiritual mother. We are paying homage to you, and we are recognizing any female who has been a nurturer and a giver. So this month, as I stated before, is a month that's highlighting all mothers, spiritual as well as biological. Our next guest, in the previous session, we had a wonderful discussion with Linda Minnick, who is still on the line and available to take calls from anyone who would like to ask her any follow-up questions. And she would take the calls at around 8:45. Our next guest is Louise Helene. Louise Helene is a master psychic, spiritual mother and advisor and healer, tarot card reader, gifted medium, and crystal ball gazer. Throughout her 30-year career, Louise has conducted thousands of accurate readings and is currently a featured psychic advisor with Keen.com. She is the author, or the co-author of, I Saw Your Future, and He's Not It, a psychic guide to true love, published by New Age publisher Llewellyn Worldwide in January 2013. I Saw Your Future is a self-help intuitive relationship guide that teaches women how to date and mate successfully. A second-generation psychic, Louise honed her abilities under the guidance of her mother, spiritualist minister and psychic radio show host, Reverend Louise Helene. She currently resides in the greater Chicago area. To learn more about Louise or to contact her to schedule a reading, you can visit her on her website. Visit her website, which is www.louisehelenethepsychic.com. So what I would like to do at this point is bring in Miss Louise Helene. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. How are you this evening?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Doing very well. I was very amused by your title, I Saw Your Future, He's Not It. When I told people about the title, they thought it was humorous. I thought it was very, very humorous. So how did you come up with that title? And also I want to let the listening audience know that you will be available to give them intuitive readings if anyone would like to call in to ask how she or even he can determine a person that is his or her best mate, because sometimes we miss the cues and the clues.
You know, the title is, I Saw Your Future and He's Not It. Sometimes he is it, sometimes he's not. And what I try to do is show women, well, the book does, and I try to talk to women, and so that they can use their own inner intuition to be able to guide themselves, because many times women ignore feelings. They'll meet someone or they're with someone, and they'll make excuses for them. They'll ignore their inner intuition. And, you know, women are everyone has intuition, and it's just more developed in some people than others. And some of us can listen to it, and some people ignore. So I try to teach women in the book. I have exercises in the book that teach them how to exercise their intuitive muscle. I call it their psychic muscle. And there's some visualization exercises and some to develop intuition and to be able to recognize it when you do get a feeling about someone, whether they're in your life or it's someone that you've just met.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. I know Linda is a mom, and she talked about how she will use her intuition, too, as a mother in raising her children. And I think that men have intuitive gifts, too, but they have not been encouraged to hone their skills and that because that's considered more feminine energy, so they tend to dismiss that. But I think that that's wonderful. And how did you, because that's a special kind of niche in terms of intuitive readings. So how did you come across that or develop that? The skill in terms of showing women how to develop mates that are better suited for them, or best suited for them.
It's from years of giving readings. You know, my mother was a reader, and I studied under her, and I gave my first reading when I was 12 years old. My mother was a spiritualist minister, and she took me, you know, I know you're focusing on mothers, and my mother was very amazing. And when she was becoming a minister, she had to give sermons in the spiritualist church, and I would always go with her. And she, I gave my first reading when I was 12 years old. In front of the church. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, over the years, helping her and having my own practice, one of the biggest, I get all kinds of questions, you know, about jobs and different things, but a very big problem that women have has to do with their love life and choosing the right person, finding the right person, knowing how to handle the person that's in their life. And so it's something that I just many clients call me, and probably 90% of my clients have questions about love, and it's women. I have men clients, but I a lot of, most of my clients are women.
Mm-hmm. So when you've talked to women and given them information, how do they respond? Because I know sometimes it's very painful for women to know that they're in a relationship that's no longer working or has never worked. Sometimes you're in a relationship that has never worked. And we as women tend to be to find excuses as reasons not to leave.
Yes. And they ignore their own intuition. Many times they have intuition, they have that gut feeling right from the beginning, and they ignore those feelings. And, when I see that someone in their life is not it, that it's not the person they're supposed to be with, it takes them a while to accept it, but they're always happier. I also want women to find the love that they should have in their life,
mm-hmm.
and the love that they want and that they should have, because everyone should be loved in the right way.
Mm-hmm. And it's never too late.
Someone makes them happy.
Yeah, and it's never, ever, ever too late. I mean, I just read about a couple of weeks ago that someone who I think is just so wonderful and so, she's one of my icons. Tina Turner is getting married again at the age of 73.
Oh, wonderful, yes.
Yeah, so it's never, ever too late. She got out of her dysfunctional marriage with 15 cents in her pocket. So when I hear women staying, you know, for whatever reasons, I said, Tina left and had 15 cents. And she told Ike the only thing he could not take was her name. So she left, and look at where she is now. Because she left, the universe opened up all these opportunities for her. And I think women we find excuses to stay.
Yes, women do, and sometimes they're afraid to leave. But so many times they know, inside of them they know, intuitively they know. And that, in the book, that's what I try to show women to, not only feel it, but to recognize it, and hopefully from doing that, they'll make the right decision. And Tina Turner, that was, I saw the movie. It was a fabulous movie. She's a very inspirational lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, she decided to take her life. And so if she could leave with 15 cents, then I tell women there's no reason why to stay, because then what we're saying to the universe is that we don't trust God, because the spirit is telling us, I have something better for you. And we keep rationalizing and talking to God to stay in the relationship. And then it just gets worse. And you feel more devalued. And then what happens is if you have children, and this is one of the things, too, that we have to understand. If you have children, they're watching you. They're watching you make decisions, and you're teaching them how to be in relationships. You know,
yes,
unfortunately.
Very true. You know, in my book, I've been a reader, of course, for many, many years, and I have clients that had for a long time, and I know I tell the story, their story. Of course, I change the names because everything is confidential, but I change the names, but I tell stories about real clients when they called me, when I first heard from them, and I know the outcome of their story, and if the guy was it or if he wasn't, and some of my clients don't end up at all with the man that they called me about, and in many ways the universe opens up and they find someone else comes into their life that's the right person. So there's stories, there's many stories, the book has stories of women that how their problems were resolved and what occurred. So they're very interesting stories, too. Mm-hmm. They're very interesting stories. And I hear, whenever I think I've heard everything, I hear something else. So,
yeah.
Yes.
And what do you think, especially, well, the show is about women, and in particular, too, women who are mothers. And what do you think women who are mothers do when they're in relationships that are dysfunctional with their husbands or with their fathers of their children? Why do you think that they continue to stay? I've heard all of the reasons.
I've heard many reasons. Women use the finances as an excuse not to live.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it is a genuine issue. And many times women do not want to be alone. Mm-hmm. They want love, and they're afraid that if they go out, whether they're a mother or not, many times women are afraid of going out and the unknown. And they're afraid of the unknown and moving on. And so I've heard many reasons why. The main reason is that they love the person that they're with. And sometimes we can change someone. Sometimes with counseling and if you know how to deal with a partner, sometimes things can be improved. And I've had clients where things get much better for them.
Mm-hmm.
But women stay for many reasons. Financial is the biggest one that I hear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Probably the biggest one. And fear of being alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what you think about becomes your reality. If you think you need him.
Oh, absolutely.
Because of finances, then the universe has to show up and block all your opportunities because you see him as your source. You see the man as your source. So nothing then can come through because in the back of your mind, he is your plan A and plan B.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't move forward because, and I've seen people where, and I've heard this story years ago. This woman kept saying, please remove my stumbling block in her prayer since her husband dropped dead because he was her stumbling block. So,
yes.
I said that to a client a couple of years ago, and they made her paranoid. So, because in a lot of cases, the woman has allowed him to be her stumbling block. You know, he was not her life's mate. Sometimes people come into our reason for you to have children with, and that's their sole purpose, and they overstay. And so then women get locked into dysfunctional patterns because of what they see their mothers do. And that's unfortunate because if you're raised with mothers who were disenfranchised and who were subjected to emotional abuse, and the children are watching it, male or female, that's all they know. So unconsciously, they adopt those patterns. And so with the first guest with Linda, what she did, which was so incredible, is she empowered her children, and all of them saw a strong mother, an empowered mother, who took care of the household. So now she has sons who are empowered men and daughters who empower. So they know how to be in relationships because they're looking at her. But sometimes when women stay for the financial reasons, the damage that is done is far worse than the quote-unquote appearance of financial ruin, because you're teaching sons and daughters to stay in loveless relationships or battering relationships for the sake of money.
Yes.
And you're teaching them that they don't have the power within themselves to make a difference. That's why I love Tina's story. She said, I'm not taking this. Even with 15 cents in my pocket, I have my dignity. 15 cents in my name and my dignity, you know, are far better than staying in this abusive relationship. I can't do it anymore. So, but I've seen people who do that, and it saddens me, because we as women believe, and we come up with all kinds of rationales and excuses to stay. And then I've said to clients, you then can't trust God or the universe, because you're then saying that this is as good as it gets. And so when God is saying to you, just trust me, I have something better for you, and they're like, they don't trust it. And so it's no judgment, but then people continue to repeat the patterns and cycles. And after a while, especially as a therapist, I don't let people keep telling me the same story, because they get stuck in the story. Mm-hmm. After a while, women get stuck in the story. And nothing can change, because they are holding on
They have to change.
They have to change. They're holding on to a story that no longer, that really never really served them. But then to have them keep repeating the same story about the pain, to me, it's not helping them grow.
Yes.
So, and we as women have that issue more than men, I think.
Yes, very much. And thinking positive has to become a habit instead of thinking negative. And,
right.
And having faith and feeling your intuition to guide you. But, you know, many times I tell clients to say some mantras, like, if they're looking for someone, I will meet the man I love today. And, and I'll say, every day, get up and say it. Whether you just get in the habit of saying it. And they'll say it for 3 days, and they'll say, well, he didn't come in. He didn't come to my life yet. And I try to explain to them that we have to train. You have to throw that out into the universe. And what we say, the vibration of sound, and what we say goes out into the universe, and it does come back to us. So when people are saying negative things, I had a client say to me just the other day, she said this to me before. She said, I try to think positive, but nothing ever good ever happens to me.
Wow.
So right there she made a negative statement. So it's very important, and you know, you were talking about mothers with their children, it's very important for mothers to show and encourage encourage thinking positively, because in our deep subconscious, you know, there's a lot of negativity that we don't even realize. And the sound vibration is very important, yes. And what we say, the sound comes back to us.
It doesn't return to your void. That's true. That's in, I know it's probably not in all the religions, but I know in the Bible it's definitely in that. I know of someone who was married for 30 years and recently divorced about 8 years ago.
Yes.
And she was in a relationship. She was a stay-at-home mom. And she was a mother of three children, three daughters. And they told her when she was suffering through it, because she was suffering through it because her husband was financially secure, and he made very good money, and she had stopped her life to take care of the children. And so they told her, they saw her suffer through the marriage. And they told her, when she finally decided to get out of it after 30 years, they said, we're glad that you did this. You should have done this a long time ago, because we saw your pain. And it affected them.
Yes.
You know, because they were watching her go through it. And that's what mothers don't really understand. You think that you're doing it for the benefit of your children. But a lot of times the children are saying, we saw the pain. We saw the abuse. So even though you stayed, it still affected us negatively. You did the best you could. They weren't blaming their mom, but they said they saw her pain. And it affected how they now interact and have relationships.
Yes.
It affects male children because if they see the father being abusive, even if they're not abusive with the father, it's teaching them a lesson about how men can be or how the woman is. Sometimes men see women being abused, and they then get women who are abusive to them, like the father was abusive to the mother. They get women that are not faithful. Mm-hmm. If the father is not faithful, they end up in relationships sometimes with women who are not faithful.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes.
that energy, is in everything
yes.
is energy. So that
yes.
energy gets perpetuated. So to stay, and when I see women staying, it's their choice. And I have stopped counsel, because especially
yes.
when women stay, they really don't want to leave, and they come up with excuses to stay, no matter what. You know, because when that excuse leaves, then they come up with another excuse, and that's their choice.
And women want to fix things. They want
yeah.
to make things right. And it's very difficult for many times for women to walk away. There's many reasons, but women do want, we're fixers. We want to fix things, and some things we have to give up. You know, romance is very challenging now.
Mm-hmm.
There's many people who are divorced and they're out looking, and there's online dating. And, you know, my book mentions, they have many, you know, like, why doesn't he call? There's very common questions that women have. Finding the new person, your soulmate, the new person that's going to be in your life is challenging. And we need all our intuition around us. But there's many people out looking the second time or the third time, and
mm-hmm.
they don't want. And many times people make the same mistakes and don't listen to themselves over and over
mm-hmm.
again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Many of my clients will have the same kind of. They'll tell me it'll be the same kind of relationships.
Different
over
names
and over
with
again.
The same pathology. Yeah.
Same one. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because we've gotten those disenfranchised messages as children. But
well,
usually we're imitating what we saw our parents go through.
Yes.
And unless we go into life coaching with someone like Linda or myself or counseling, and I do counseling too, or see
yes.
someone like you, unless we really, really, really say, my life has to change. You have to get so tired of your life being the same way. Unless we really want that change to happen, which means, and I've seen women who look in the mirror and they're trying to change the reflection in the mirror who is their husband, and I tell them, he isn't the issue. You know, it's us, it's something within us that's attracting that to us, so we want him to change. When it's us, we have to change, because when we change at the base of who we are, then he will float out of your life. Or...
Yeah.
His behavior would change because you've changed. You know,
yeah.
I mean, in most cases, he would float out, especially if it's been a long-term relationship, like with a friend who had been married for over 30 years. She had the courage to say, because all of her children were gone by then anyway, but she had been a stay-at-home mom. And I said, that was similar to a Tina story, except that she had even less resources. But she chose to leave. So I said, now, if she can choose to leave a relationship, after 30 years of not having a job or any of that, she said the fear of leaving did not hold her, lock her in anymore, because that was the fear. You know, you don't have any skills. You know, you've been in this relationship for so many years. You're older now. And once she left, she has redefined herself. I mean, she now has pulled out strengths she never knew she had that were dormant. And she has done a phenomenal job. Her life has just changed in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
In so many ways. So,
And here's another thing, though. You know, as we mentioned, sometimes people are in our life for a reason, and that whether it be to have children with them or to learn something. I actually feel that your friend that you're talking about, that she actually intuitively, maybe without even knowing it, intuitively knew it was time to move on.
Mm-hmm.
I actually feel it was the right time. I feel psychically that it was time to move on. And she might not have realized that it was intuitive or that gut feeling, but that it was time, that there was nothing more in that relationship for her.
Mm-hmm.
And you said she's blossomed also.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that never would have happened inside the relationship.
Oh, no,
it wouldn't
have
happened like that. And even with Tina was able to become this great singer, whatever, but the fullness of who she is, because when you're in relationships like that, your partner, and sometimes there's men in abusive relationships with women, that other partner is going to demean you in some kind of way, and they're going to always make you feel like you're not good enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not young enough, because they have relationships, they have outside affairs. And that, no matter how people try to rationalize it in their heads, that does not make anyone feel good when you're married to someone and he or she is having outside relationships. And with this person, she had found out about that as well. And I know of other people who are in situations like that. And so it's not judging, but to me, it goes back to whether or not you're a mother and you're working in a job that's abusive. Anything that's abusive, to me, is saying to us, male or female, that we really don't trust the universe. Because we feel like that job is as good as it gets and we have to suffer through it. The relationship is as good as it gets and we have to suffer through it. Or even if you're suffering from abuse from your children, any abuse is saying that the abuser is greater than God. And we rationalize the reasons as to why we stay. And the universe has to confirm all of those reasons because it's a belief. So if it's because, you know, I can't survive or, you know, or this person needs me for whatever reason, the universe will keep coming up with those excuses until you change your mindset, because it's going to give you what you believe.
Yes. The universe, sometimes the universe, well, the universe does guide us along the way. It's very important. You know, when I talk about mantras or saying something and putting it out there, the sound is very important. What we hear comes back to us, and what we hear also has an effect on a very deep subconscious level with us.
Yeah.
And people have to start thinking more positively and putting that out, because we create our reality.
Yeah.
And we draw things to us. And I see it many times. And it comes back to us. So even if I tell my clients, even if you're not feeling it, when you get up in the morning, look in the mirror, and whatever you want that day, or you want your soulmate to come into your life, my soulmate will come into my life today. And don't worry if he doesn't come in that day. Say it and hear it. And the universe will bring that person to you.
What advice would you give women, in addition to the mantras, what advice would you give women who are mothers, who are in relationships that are not empowering relationships with their husbands, or if they're in even same-sex relationships or whatever? Because sometimes
I feel that they need to, first of all, they need to meditate and try to feel intuitively, is this time to move on? They need to give a lot of thought to this, because it's very important for their mental and physical health, and their future and their children's future too. So it's very important that they do that. And I do have some exercises in my book. I have an exercise that it's not visualization. This is actually to exercise your psychic muscle. And one of the exercises I have is to take a glass of water, a drop of food dye, and put it in there and look at it and see and try to look into it. Like, what do you see? This is this is exercising. And these things exercise your, like, when you want to become fit, you exercise your body. This is exercising your psychic muscle. And I would tell someone to do these things, because people will not move on until they feel it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll hold on to it till they have to feel it. And so I tell them to try to develop their own intuition. And actually, many of my clients are very psychic themselves, but they don't know how to listen to. They already know many of the things they're talking to me about, but they don't trust themselves. And what I try to do in the book is get them to, there's many different exercises to get them to develop and to trust their feeling. So I would definitely, when you're talking about women with who are in relationships that aren't working, with children, I would definitely tell them to try to develop yourself intuitively so that you really feel and want to do to leave, or know the course of what you're supposed to do for the best for you and for your children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very important. Mothers are very the most important person in our life.
Mm-hmm.
The most important person in our life.
And it's so interesting, excuse me, because sometimes your adult children are watching you too. Because my friend had adult children, and they were watching her, and we're teaching them how to be in relationships. So people think they're only watching you when their children, as adults, are watching you, because they get confused. And you are the primary nurturer, caregiver, more so than the father in most cases. In some cases, the father is the nurturer, but in most cases, it's the mother. So when females or males see the primary nurturer, you know, being abused and in any kind of way, is sending some very confusing messages about how women should be treated, or how they should be in relationships. So and I think women
have to know when to move. Women have to know when to stay and when to move on for themselves and their children. They have to know when to stay and when to move on, and that is probably the biggest problem. Is they don't understand when they don't feel. They have to really feel it. I have never talked to a client, and I have clients that I've had for many, many years. No matter what I say to them, and no matter how often I'm right, they never move on until they're feeling it.
Right.
And that's, in my book, I'm trying to get them to feel it so that they can move on a little faster. Many times I know that they're not ready to move on. I'll even say to many of them, you're not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell them, you should move on, but I know you're not ready yet. And many times they'll say, no, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when they're ready, they move on. But my book, I try to get them to listen and have a little more confidence in themselves and listen to their intuition. And I have some clients that's really helped them, and I want to put the power in women's hands so that they can move on faster or work things out. Sometimes people work things out, and so that the women are the givers so often.
Yeah,
you know, the givers. I have a very strong mother, very strong. She's very intelligent. She had a radio show. And I come from a large family. I had a wonderful father, too. There's 10 of us.
Wow.
And, yes, I'm the 8th one in 10. And I was her little student. I was with her all the time. And when she was becoming a minister, through her readings, I helped her with her readings. She encouraged me to get my first reading when I was 12. And my mother was I was raised around a very strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
And a very strong father, but a very strong woman, and she showed all of us the value of intuition and how it helps us in our life. So, and women have it. Men are intuitive too. Everyone is psychic to a certain level. It's just developed more in some of us, and some people listen and have more confidence in what they're feeling.
And they follow their intuition. You know,
and they follow it.
Because people, I know that there are women who have been clients of mine, and it's right there in front of them. And it's kind of like, and what I've seen, and this is what Linda does, you know, with her life coaching, which is wonderful. With life coaching is really wonderful, because sometimes women want to use you, your words, to say to their husband, so to quote you. Not that it's coming from them, because they don't have the courage sometimes to take responsibility for their feelings, and they don't want to make him mad. And that's really perplexing to me. For me, they don't want to make him mad, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And they will sacrifice themselves. They become sacrificial lambs to sacrifice themselves and their children emotionally to stay in situations that are abusive. Because when you don't, when you stay longer than is healthy, you're sacrificing yourself. And then it's also a belief that we don't feel that we're good enough. Because if we did feel, because then we say, well, I'm staying here because of this reason. And it's always because of something that's in his benefit, but never, or if you're in a same-sex relationship, the benefit of the partner, not what's in the best interest of you. And when I hear that, after a while, I stop commenting because I know that the person isn't ready, and there's no judgment. But then, but they keep repeating the script for some reason, and I say to them, "Well, it serves no purpose to keep talking about the same thing. You know, years down the road, because things haven't changed because she hasn't changed. So he can't change for better or worse." Because she hasn't changed. So he continues to do things that are not in the interest of the family unit because the mother hasn't changed. And the mother is blaming the father. And I said, no, he's not the issue. Because if you change, he has to change. He will either move out of your life or he will get his act together. But to sit there and complain and be the victim and the martyr serves no purpose, and it keeps the women stuck. So with my practice, now I allow people to talk about it to get it out because I don't want it locked in their cells, but then I don't have any more comments because I know that they're not ready to move forward. And it's it's okay. But I see, and like I tell women, your money will get blocked. Everything will get blocked because that energy has to shift. And so if you don't allow, and the universe is saying to you, you got to shift. If you don't shift within yourself, it's not about him. If you don't make some decisions, we can't give you the prosperity and all this because he's not part of this program. Like the friend I had who was in a marriage for a number of years, she said when she moved into a particular residence that they had, the land told her that the husband was not going to remain on the land. His energy could not remain on the land. It told her that, and she decided to do something about it years later. But she knew. And so she stayed and stayed thinking it would get better. And then she said she decided after a period that my health is worth, my emotional health, because it wasn't a physical abusive relationship. And but she decided that she had to move forward. And so, and everything changed once she made that decision. Everything just started turning around in her best interest, you know.
Yes. You know, women, you were talking about women not wanting to, many times to speak up about something. Here's something that I hear very often. I actually mention it in my book about men don't really want to call. Now, this is when people that are in relationships and newly relationships that are beginning. Men are not wanting to call women. They're texting them.
They're texting them. Yeah.
And I hear this over and over again. And many times the woman, they don't speak at all. It's all through text. And it's, you know, women want to talk. They want to hear the man's voice. They might not mind texting, but they want to hear his voice. So I say to them, well, when you meet someone, instead of accepting this and letting him take the lead in this, say that you don't text.
And that's what I say. I'm single, and I tell people, my husband died a couple of years ago, and I do not text. So it's known. And the man can send that same message to 50 women. I tell women it's convenient because he doesn't have to give emotionally. And if you go for it, he's setting the tone for that. Yeah,
yes.
I agree 100%.
Oh, you're saying he can send the same message? I had a client. I've had a few clients. They're getting to know someone, and they'd get a text message in the morning, good morning, baby. Well, it was sent out to, like, 20 different women. Good morning, baby. And it's to 20 different women, you know. And I tell the women, I said, don't. And the thing is, they're afraid to tell the guy, I don't text. He said, well, if I tell him I don't text, I won't hear from him. I say, he will call you if he has to.
Right.
And I said,
if you're that important, he will call.
You have to set the tone now.
Exactly.
You know, once you let him always text you and you don't hear his voice and he doesn't have to call you, once this has been going on for 4 months, it's almost too late then.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
And it's because texting takes away the emotional connection. and it's convenient for men to do that. They hide behind the words.
Yes, and you know what they the men also do? Along with the texting, they'll snap pictures of their privates.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes, they'll snap pictures. And so a lot of this is done virtual, through the phones and the computer and everything. And many times a woman is seeing someone or dating them, and they have not spoke to the guy in like a couple weeks, actually heard his voice. It's all written. And women want to hear someone's voice. And I always tell them, don't fall into that. If you want to talk to someone, unless you want to text too, tell them you don't text.
Right. Right. Well, I literally don't text, and I don't do it for a reason. With all of my friends, with everyone, because it's too convenient for people. Well, you know, I can communicate past this, and no, you can pick up the phone. By the time it takes for me to text, I could have called you and baked a cake.
Yes.
No,
mm-hmm.
if you can't call me,
yes,
and everyone knows that, then just wait until you can call. But
mm-hmm.
texting,
yes.
That's.
Have you found that with men also that they want to text?
Yeah, a lot of men have wanted to.
Yes.
And I teach a course in psychology of interpersonal communications, and that's one of the things that is discussed in the course, that men, mm-hmm. they feel very comfortable hiding behind technology. And women,
they do. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, especially if women have been divorced and they're getting out there, they feel they have to accept that because the men present it as though they don't have an option. And whatever you believe becomes your reality. So
absolutely. Mm-hmm.
For those kinds of women, they don't have an option. But for someone like me, people know not to text me. So the only way that you can communicate is to call. And so they then call me. I mean, everyone, male or female, they will call me.
Yes.
Louise, let me just give the number again for those people who may want to call in. 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. The call-in number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Okay, I have someone who wants to ask your question.
Yes.
Okay. Greetings. Welcome to Higher Consciousness.
Hello.
Hi. Is this me? Is this you talking to me? Hi, this
yes.
is Sherry.
Hi, Sherry. You have a question?
Hello, Sherry.
Yes, hi. I'm sorry I came on late. I didn't really pay attention to which spiritualist church that your guest is affiliated with, because I go to the spiritualist church here on Cape Cod in Wareham.
Mm-hmm. At the moment, my mother was a spiritualist minister, but I'm not at a church now because in my area there isn't one. You know, there's not that many spiritualist churches around anymore. You know that,
oh, okay,
right?
That's interesting.
Yeah, there's not that many. There's more in California. I'm in the Chicago area. And the closest one is quite far, but I'm a spiritualist, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm a New England.
The national, I'm affiliated with the national one, though, yes.
Okay.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, I did have a question.
Yeah.
I find that I'm clairaudient, and I'm not, and I'm trying to be not scared.
Yes. Yes.
Because it's like, if I don't mind hearing things in my head, and I do see spirits, but the disembodied voice is a little frightening. So what do I do to allow them to come through? I do protect myself with the white light of love and protection.
Yes. Well, as I'm hearing your voice and trying to get your vibration, I feel many spirit guides around you.
Yes.
I feel you have many spirit guides around you, and I feel protection around you. Actually, I get a very good feeling. I actually feel you are going to be hearing more things. But what you can do is to actually try to set a time aside where you hear things, you know, where you're
okay.
open to this, and let your guides give you information at that time, and ask them not to... to give it to you at times when you are meditating or when you are ready. And that way you can sort of separate that, because you don't want to be hearing things all the time.
Correct. Correct.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You have many guides around you. And you know, you have a spirit guide by the name of Harold.
Harold?
Harold, yes.
Oh, Harold, okay.
Name. Yes, and he wants to say hello to you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it was the last voice I heard was a man. It was, and I was like, okay.
Yes.
It
yes.
was very. It was very cheerful. He was very cheerful.
Yes. But you have many spirit guides around you. Lovely. You have a lovely vibration.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and I want to say one other thing. I feel all of a sudden I heard the word move. Someone's going to talk to you about a move.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to talk to you about a move, and I don't feel it will occur, but I feel a big discussion about a move.
Wow, that's great.
Mm-hmm. But they're
so you said
to
professionally about a move. Okay, that's good.
Yes, but they're supposed to stay where they are. They're going to talk to you about a move, but I feel that they're supposed to stay where they are for a while. Okay.
Okay, great. I appreciate that. That's wonderful.
Yes. Yes. And did you have any other questions?
Just one more, if that's okay. I actually saw a man come up the steps, and my office is on the second floor of my house, and this is my bedroom, and I was in my bedroom, and I actually saw a man come up the stairs and go into my office. And I think that was probably just one of my spirit guides, because I was not scared. It was like, oh, okay.
Oh, no, that was a spirit guide. Mm-hmm. You have many spirits around you. Many.
Many, yes, I know, and I see them and I feel them, and one of them is an archangel who's gigantic, who I see out of my mind's eye.
Yes, yes. I also feel, I do feel an Indian spirit guide around you also.
Yes, yes, I have lots of Indian spirit guides that actually live in my house.
Yes, I feel that. I feel that.
Thank you.
And anyway, lovely feeling, and keep listening, but just ask them to give it to you at certain times. You don't want to be hearing things all the time. You know?
Okay, I
try
will
to
do
separate
that.
The two. Yes.
Wow, and that's fabulous. Yeah. I appreciate this. Thank you very much.
Yes,
you've been very
bless.
Interesting also. So I have a nephew that lives in the Chicago area. If he wanted to get in touch with you, how would he do so?
He could contact me through my website, Louise Helene the Psychic .com,
okay.
And there's a way you can leave mail on there.
Oh, wonderful. I will do that.
Yes.
Okay.
And God bless you. God bless you.
Thank you. Blessings to you as well. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And thank you, Mr. Mila.
Hey, you're welcome. Okay. All right. Sure.
Yes. God bless.
Thank you. God bless you too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in these closing moments, I'm going to bring Linda back on the line. Louise, Helene, can you give people your contact information again?
Yes, Louise Helene the Psychic. .com.
And can you spell it for people?
Louise Helene, Helene, the Psychic. .com. And I also actually have, they can email me through the email that's on the website. I'm also a reader on keen.com, K-E-E-N .com. And I've been reading on there for quite a while. And my book, I feel that all women, whether they're married, in a relationship, looking, I feel that they would find it interesting, and it's a way to develop our intuition.
Okay, and give the name of your book again.
I Saw Your Future, and He's Not It.
Okay, and that's a psychic guide to help women become more intuitive, to,
yes, to
know how
intuitive.
To.
Yes, uh-huh. And interesting stories about my clients and what happened. You know, many times clients have no hope of finding anyone, and just they open themselves up and boom, someone comes into their life. I have a client that has never had a boyfriend. She's 40 years old, never had a boyfriend, and in 3 months met someone and is engaged and getting married now.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, and she was doing the mantras that I was telling her to do and doing some of the exercises in the book. She bought the book, and she actually got it on pre-order, like, early, and right away. right away.
Wow.
It started helping her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I have been really, really impressed with the conversation with you as well as with Linda. I've plugged Linda back in. So we have 6 remaining moments, and if there's anyone else who would like to call, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. So, Linda, do you have any closing remarks that you would like to leave with the listening audience, as well as giving your contact information?
All right. Well, thank you again. Louise, I loved hearing about that. You know, we talk about our thoughts, and that's a lot of what I work with my clients on, is changing their beliefs to recognizing the truth. So you're absolutely right. If we think we can, we can. If we think we can't, we can't, which is what Henry Ford said.
Yes.
And my contact information, if anyone would like some additional information on what I do, it's Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at Linda Minnick, M-I-N-N-I-C-K.com. And my office number is 678-367-3459. And Jamelia, thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
You're very, very welcome.
And happy
Mother's
Day.
And Linda also does long distance
life
coaching for people around the country and around the world. So,
yes.
So even though she's based in Georgia, she can also provide counseling services to anyone. So
yes.
Please go to
thank
her
you.
Website. Okay, and Louise?
Yes, and Linda, I wanted to say that I didn't get a chance to say hello to you. I was listening to you on the show a little bit before. I'm going to listen to the show again when it's over. But you were very interesting, and a lot of things that you said, everything that you were saying was very right on. And Jamelia, I love being on your show. It's been
very interesting.
You have a powerful energy about you.
Oh, I
both
do?
Both of you ladies, actually, both
oh,
of you. But you
well,
have a
you.
Very powerful energy, and I feel, I'm going to give you a psychic prediction, I see you on an airplane, and
who,
I see
Linda
you.
Or me?
You.
Okay.
I see you on an airplane, and I see the number 4 in connection to this. But the airplane is sort of symbolic. I feel you going quite far and speaking to a rather large group of people. And I see a man and 2 ladies, and I feel that you will be doing some more work for them. And this is this reminds me of being sort of a big thing.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm. Thank you.
It sounds like a big thing, and I feel that there will be some sort of contract involved in it.
Well, thank you. I received that. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. God bless.
Thank you. Well, I have truly enjoyed having both you ladies on the show. I think it was very important. I know that it was very important for women, be they spiritual mothers or biological mothers, or just young women, period, to have heard the empowering words from both of you so that they can know how to take charge of their lives. And it's never too late. As I said, Tina Turner, at the age of 73, decided that she wanted to get married again for the second time. And even if a woman does not want to get remarried, just to take charge of our lives and not to blame others, our mates, our husbands, or whatever, because they are not the root, and not even to blame ourselves. But like Helene has said, and Louise Helene has said, and like Linda has said, just they both are providing wonderful tools to allow us to take our lives back, to take charge of our lives.
Oh, yes.
And to have a wonderful life that we came here to live.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank both of you ladies so very, very much for being
guests
on my show.
Thank you. Thank you.
And for those of you who are listening, I would encourage you to listen to the archived show, which will become available immediately after the end of this show, and to send the link to friends of yours, because I think they would truly benefit from this show. And please give Linda Minnick a call and Louise Helene a call. Both of them have wonderful services. So everyone have a wonderful week, and take care until the next time. Thank you. Thank you both, ladies. I truly appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
And thank you, Sherry, too, for being a wonderful calling guest. Thank you.
Thank you.
I release all disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me, and love lives inside me. That's why today I take life as it